Welcome to the Mojo Podcast with me, Richard Stokes. I hope you enjoyed last week's topical episode with Ali Barani, when we talked about global harmony in the context of the US presidential election. Sometimes accepting decisions and finding the courage and grace to move on is a great help with your mojo. Just saying. And on that fateful day in early November, when America made a choice, I talked to today's guest. Ben Branson is the founder and CEO of Seedlip and Acorn Drinks, the world's first distilled non-alcoholic spirits and aperitifs. If you've looked for an alternative to fizzy water or mocktails when you're not drinking alcohol, you've probably found Seedlip, and it was a joy talking to Ben about the mojo journey behind him conceiving and creating not just a new brand, but a whole new category. To say some people were sceptical about his plans is an understatement, but he, in his own words, was deluded enough to believe in his idea and to move ahead, driven by the idea and wanting to see it through whilst doing the right thing in the world. We talk at length about some of the challenges Ben had to overcome along the way, not least having no background in drinks and doing all of this by himself. It's a powerful lesson for anyone looking to do something new, following a calling and discovering your true strengths. What this conversation really unearths is Ben's passion for nature and care for the natural world. It's evident this is where his passion is, and therefore his drive to create Seedlip and, by the sounds of it, many, many new brands and innovations in the pipeline. We talk about an encounter with his hero and mine, Sir David Attenborough, and his hopes for the next 30 years and how he and Seedlip want to play their part in preserving the natural world. Now, what's key is he certainly doesn't claim he or his business is perfect in this regard, but they are working very hard to do all they can to ensure the natural world is protected so his kids can enjoy it in the same way he clearly does. So yes, to me, I found Ben to be a very natural CEO and super inspiring business leader. It's a really evocative conversation which took place on Seedlip's fifth birthday, making it a particularly reflective time for Ben. I really hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Please remember to share it, subscribe to get new episodes, and please do leave a 5-star rating and write a short review on Apple Podcasts, all of which really helps more people discover the Mojo Podcasts. Now, onto my conversation with Ben. So hello and welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, and I'm delighted today to be joined by the founder and CEO of Seedlip and Acorn Drinks, Ben Branson. And Ben, happy birthday. I believe it's your fifth birthday today. The company's birthday, I should say.
Yeah, the company's. So November the 4th, 2015 is when I drove the first bottles in the back of my car that I'd made down to London, down to Selfridges, and parked in the wrong place, didn't wear a high-vis jacket, got in a bit of trouble for that, and went and managed to find my way through the rabbit warren of the back alleys of Selfridges and go and stick them on shelf.
Oh, what a it sounds so, when you're just describing it, sounds very visceral. You know, you can remember every detail of that day by the sounds of it.
Do you know what though? It feels 5 years, it's not actually that long. And I do still, I remember it very, very vividly.
And on this day then of celebration, of remembering that drive down to London's illustrious Selfridges and putting those bottles on the shelf for the first day, how is your mojo today then, of all days?
Well, you know, we're talking on a day that is obviously a milestone day for Seedlip. It's also seemingly becoming a pretty big milestone day within the world of politics and history. In terms of what's going to happen in the US, but you can save that for another podcast.
It's a whole episode there.
I'm genuinely both kind of excited and terrified about the future in equal measure. And I've woken up this morning, it's first frost, which is really exciting. And I got to take my 14-month-old daughter to nursery, and she walked in, and that's awesome. And didn't cry, and that's good. Really kind of, you know, lots of birthday messages, talking to the team. And yeah, despite the chaos that the world's in, today's sort of pretty good.
Great. And in terms of, you say, you know, obviously there's a lot going on in the world right now, excited and terrified in equal measure. When I say that, the word mojo, what comes up for you? What does it mean to you?
I mean, and you probably get this a lot, you know, the first word is Austin Powers. That's like yes. Word association game. Austin Powers comes up. I have a really simple distinction of, or kind of my take on it. And I'm sure lots of people can relate to when things feel fluid and simple and they fall into place and you feel like winning and you know, things are slightly effortless, because just things are happening in the right order at the right time in the right way. And then there are other times when it's hard and things go wrong and people don't have clarity. So that takes longer to do things and you feel like you're kind of pushing everything uphill. And that's when I don't think kind of, you know, you've got your mojo, as it were. So yeah, it's, to me, it's when things are clicking and falling into place and actions happening and things are changing and people are making stuff happen. I think that's when it flows.
So yeah, that sense of, as you say, flow, effortlessness, and when you're seeing things happen, is it when you're having impact? Is that something that's important to you?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we recently launched a gift box that we'd actually grown. So it's a gift box made from the roots of mushrooms.
Wow.
Into this material called mycelium, which is incredible. It's, you know, a miracle material, a kind of definitely an incredible packaging solution. It composts in 40 days, and it's brilliant. And I wanted to send this box to Sir David Attenborough and to his production team as a bit of a thank you, you know, for all the work that they do in kind of talking about the natural world and the environment. And we managed to find the production company address. We actually managed to find David Attenborough's home address as well quite quickly, concerningly. I was already to send this box, and my wife said, "Look, Ben, why don't you just drive and see if he's there? You know, why don't you just tip up and see if you can leave it on his doorstep or something?"
Search of Sir David.
Yeah, so I for once took my wife's advice and drove to where he lives. Tipped up outside and rang his doorbell and he answered. And this was a couple of weeks ago. And I was able to meet him and say thank you and give him, you know, this gift box that is made from mushrooms and just, you know, thank him. And he signed my book. And it's just it was a really amazing moment or reminder to me, actually, that, you know, you can make stuff happen and you can kind of take action, you know, to make change. And, you know, these sort of dreams or heroes or kind of believing that things aren't possible. Yeah. It was just a really nice reminder to me that, you know, you can go and grab it and make it happen. So yeah, impact is really important, and taking action and taking responsibility and just getting on and doing the right thing in the world is important.
Oh, that's beautiful. I've got goosebumps thinking about meeting Sir David Attenborough, just a national treasure. And as you say, so much that he has done to shine a light on the natural world and our presence in the natural world and how we interact with nature, not just for people in Britain, but I think globally, he just transcends now. I think he transcends nations and language even. So wow, that's incredible.
He's a legend, and you know, do meet your heroes is my learning.
Yes, certainly him. Certainly him. Yeah. And that sets up really nicely, actually, for, you know, talking to you about your journey with Seedlip and other brands you've created. There's a lot of ground we could cover, but we wanted to center this around exactly kind of what you brought up there, and having Sir David as an icon, a hero, around your passion for nature, what it means to you, how you surround yourself with it, how you put yourself in it, and how you just talked about there with this new packaging solution, how you're, I guess, using nature to help nature, and, you know, growing a successful business by putting nature at the heart of it. So that's what we're going to call our North Star for today. But I think for some context, I'm sure lots of listeners have come across, especially Seedlip, as you say, it's been around for 5 years. And really created the no alcohol spirit category from scratch. But getting some context of what drew you to that from your beginnings. How did this all come to bear? What was the calling that you were answering?
Yeah, it's been a fascinating journey over the last 5 years, and I come from a farming family up in North Lincolnshire, where we've been farming for about 320 years now, still farming today. And so, you know, on the one hand, I definitely got my blood runs green, and I enjoyed a childhood largely outside, and came to appreciate the hard work that went into working with the land and providing food for people. And that's my mum's side. My dad's actually in the world of brand design. And so, you know, at 8 years old, I kind of understood how the chips on my plate got from our field and the potatoes. But I also understood what a brand was. And I also understood, you know, at the time, how cool I thought design was, and how cool I actually thought supermarkets were. You know, they were sort of art galleries of design. To me growing up. And so really, you know, Seedlip is absolutely a product of my upbringing, in that I have put into and onto a bottle everything that I care about and that I value and that I think is important. That's sort of the win for me, that's the payoff back for me. But in order to provide a sophisticated non-alcoholic option for somebody who is not drinking alcohol for whatever reason and does not want a horrible, crappy, pink, childish mocktail or a boring fizzy water. So, you know, it took me 2 years to create Seedlip and the distilled non-alcoholic spirits using, you know, wonderful ingredients from the natural world to create adult, tasty, delicious, non-alcoholic options, and kind of describe ourselves or kind of work with the natural world, our love for it and our care about it, to speak to an audience that hopefully shared the same sort of values.
As I say, 5 years on, in a fantastic distribution, fantastic reputation for the brand, but I'm guessing, and you sort of mentioned, you know, parking in the wrong place at Selfridges, perhaps a small challenge, but what were some of the founder challenges that you met along the way that would have had an impact on that mojo that you spoke to when things were not as effortless as you would like and not as fluid and things were taking time and there were blockages maybe? What were some of the things that cropped up?
I mean, there were a couple of big ones in that, you know, I don't have a background in drinks and I don't have a background in business. So that's they were quite kind of big challenges to get my head around. And I did this on my own. you know, in terms of I am the founder of Seedlip. So I didn't have a set of co-founders or initially I was, you know, the only person working on Seedlip. And, you know, I was incredibly fortunate to have lots of people, from, you know, the people who make the glass to people who make the labels to people who help me with the logistics to the part-time accountant. You know, I had lots of people around me, but I was solely responsible for it. And so I had to learn an industry and also learn, you know, I signed up for the wrong VAT scheme. I kind of, there were loads of, I had no idea about how to do trademarks, and I learned a hell of a lot just about what a business is, what a P&L is, what a balance sheet is. You know, people kept telling me that cash was important, but actually when you can create your own cash flow and you understand and fall in love with Excel and you fall in love with the financial aspects of a business, that can be incredibly empowering. So it was a lot to learn. And I kind of thought initially that, you know, I had this little copper still in my kitchen and I was playing around with herbs from my garden. And I thought I was just going to do something as a side project, and it was going to take 6 months and kind of, I just have fun creating my own sort of brand and launch it maybe at a farmer's market. And that was fine. That then turned into, you know, 2 years of work and launching it, you know, in Selfridges and really deludedly, you know, believing that Seedlip could change the way the world drinks. There are always challenges. They're just slightly different now than they were. And I've got a, you know, an incredible team who are an incredible group of humans that are kind of collectively together and united in their passion for the natural world and their passion for the environment and wanting to be part of the future and the solutions for the planet, and sharing a kind of a love and obsession with just how incredibly wonderful and important and genius, you know, nature is, and make and sell some drinks at the same time.
Of picturing you in your kitchen with the still, and it could have been a really lovely side project that kept you kind of entertained, shall we say. But it sounds like there was something that was driving you internally. Was it people advising you? I don't know, but that just drove you to go, now there's something bigger here. What happened?
Well, a lot of the feedback I was getting 2013 to 2015 and definitely in that first year that we launched was, what is the point of this? This is never going to sell a bottle. This is ridiculous. You know, don't give up your day job. Don't invest your own money. That was sort of the other current of, on the one hand, getting thank you. Oh my God, why has no one done this before? This is incredible. This tastes like witch's piss was a favorite comment that I do kind of remember. Yes. And this is never going to go anywhere. I don't know. I think initially I just wanted to get something on shelf. That to me was everything. It was start something and finish it and have an idea and see it through, because, you know, we can all have ideas. That's no problem. The world is full of people who have wonderful ideas. But actually seeing it through and getting it to market, was the biggest challenge to me, was just getting it to the shelf. It was sort of like, and then I'll worry about the next bit next. And you know that you really do have to be an idiot to want to launch a food or drink company, you know, because there is the rational, factual evidence and odds are dreadful of having a chance of success, you know. nine out of 10 people who start one are not going to be around in a year's time. Wow. You know, they're gonna have a slow sort of death over their second year, and that's got nothing to do with COVID, and that's got nothing to do with what's happening now. That's just the competitiveness of the food and drink industry. So you've really got to be deluded, and you've really got to be have something else within you that can hold on to some kind of idea that this could go somewhere, or you're okay with the fact that it might absolutely fail, looking that in the eye as much as it's being excited and driven and feeling good about what you're doing and ambitious that you're going to kind of make it happen, as it is going, okay, the odds are against me here. And I love the underdog position. I think I relish that, and I thrive in kind of being underestimated and wanting to prove otherwise, I think. But I am driven by a fear of failure rather than the pursuit of success. So right. I am definitely, I'm C-Lip's worst critic, absolutely worst critic,
Okay.
Because I've already thought about all the bad things about Seedlip that you could throw at me.
The witch's piss, maybe, notwithstanding. Yeah.
I've already beaten myself up for that kind of stuff already. It has been a fascinating kind of insight, personally as well as professionally, into, rolling with the knocks and the game of snakes and ladders that it is. Of running your own company.
What's your perspective on what it's done to you or for you as a person? Has it changed you? Are you, looking back, this nice 5-year time horizon we've got, obviously lots has happened, but do you see yourself as a different person, a different Ben to back then?
I do, in lots of ways, in that, my life is it hasn't changed in the sense that, I still adore the natural world and I'm happiest in nature and, seeing it through the eyes of my kids is like seeing it again. And that's, magical. So that's definitely just grown, and just got stronger. I think, I've learned a lot about my ability to balance the creative and strategic aspects of having a brand and a company, with surprising myself that, I hated maths at school. I was okay at it, but I didn't enjoy it. To then kind of be able to say things like, the other time that I'm really fucking happy is sat in front of my computer with my headphones on, listening to trance music that I never listened to in any other time in my life in an Excel spreadsheet looking at numbers. So C-Lip's given me an absolute avenue for expressing myself, creatively. It's given me an avenue to pour my love of nature out into the world. It's given me an avenue to explore flavor and plants and ingredients and drinks. And it's given me an avenue to see the potential of, young people and the people that are on our team and how incredibly well they've just done and they've developed and they've grown and they've taken on challenges and they've taken responsibility and they've made it happen. It's just been incredible to witness. And then I've learned, I've learned about the world of business and I've learned how to run a business and how to grow a business and how to do that in, more than one country. and then how to launch another business, you know, as a, with our range of non-alcoholic aperitifs, Acorn, and how to bring in the right people, you know, to help drive that. I don't know. It has changed me. I think I hope it's made me more rounded, and it's made me more driven. It's made me more ambitious. It's made me more, I don't know, maybe more aware of what's going on in the world and what's needed. I'd like to think it's made me a better person. It's definitely not made me any more patient. It's definitely not made me any more at times tolerant. it's not made me more satisfied, because I am continually dissatisfied. But it's given me more than I could ever have wished for.
And it sounds, and thank you for, you know, sharing that, you know, almost a journey of self-development and discovery that you've gone on in this 5 years, and probably a little bit before, as you were, you know, conceiving Seedlip in your head. It sounds to me something, and I think it's probably coming back to purpose and values, is really helping you with probably one of the hardest things in running a business. It's making certain decisions, as you said, you know, when do we create new brands? When do we go into new markets? When do I need to bring in certain people that have got skill sets that we really need, but also have the, I'm guessing, the values that are attractive to this company? So what has helped you with that when those really tough decisions are coming up in front of you, or you're reaching out because you know you need to make them? What's helping you then?
I've got an incredible COO, Emma Wykes, who joined pretty early on, and has built and developed an incredible team. And, you know, I love my team, obviously I do, but I'm not wild about human beings, and I'm not very social. And but Emma is, and all I've done is give her the freedom, I guess, to kind of go, just, we need the best team ever, and let's hire brilliant people, and let's have a fantastic kind of exhilarating culture that gets the best out of people and does the right thing for the business. So, you know, that's helped free up me to focus on other areas of the business. It's been a mixture of, given that Seedlip, you know, opened the category and there were no precedents for what we've done. So how do you know when the right time to go to a new market is? It's been a mixture of what's going on culturally and at a societal level across everything from cocktail trends, health and wellness trends, environmental awareness trends. How's tonic water doing in that market? What's going on within restaurants? What are chefs talking about? You know, where's yoga at, as a pithy example, within that market? How many inquiries have we had in our inbox from the public, not the trade, the public? How many people, you know, have been in touch about wanting to have Seedlip in their market? So it's been a mixture, and then it's kind of, and that's been a gathering exercise to then go, right, I think there's something interesting in Australia. Let's go, you know, or let's go to, you know, we've got Michelin star restaurants in touch from the US. That's a pretty good sign, isn't it? We've got people buying bottles, cases from the UK and getting it sent, you know, to their homes in the US. Ooh. That's another kind of, so it's been a balancing act, I think, Richard, rather than, there has been no, you know, I'd be lying if I said there was some big master 5-year plan. There wasn't, other than trying to do the right thing at the right time in the right way, and a constant push and pull of listening, absorbing, researching, trying to step our way to making the right decisions. And, you know, we went to the US in 2017, I think. Could we have gone a year later and still have a really exciting, thriving business that we've got at the moment? Yeah, we probably could have. You know, did it need my dad, who lives in New York, being the delivery boy, you know, to 11 Madison Park and these incredible restaurants that wanted to get it? Did it need that, or could we have gone earlier? It probably didn't need that, but you know, my dad wanted to help and he was there, and these guys to bottles. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's any plans we wrote were wrong as soon as we wrote them. And then it's just a bit of gut feel and some sensible assumptions to make a decision and then and go for it and get behind it.
And as you say, coming back to that thing about, you know, impact, seeing it through, and almost is that a great line about just doing the next most important thing, and not getting too het up maybe about the end destination. It's what it sounds like to me. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that is pretty fair. I mean, I think probably for the first couple of years, I was very much in the day to day and in the now, you know, in the kind of present, and we were running at such pace that, and we could make decisions very quickly, and we were really articulate and clear and focused and driven in what we were doing. And there wasn't, you know, there weren't lots of markets, there weren't lots of people. It was a small band of us. Obviously that's grown, and that brings more, it doesn't make it more complicated, but it makes it more complex. And so I'm still, you know, I was looking at what are we saying on Instagram today about our birthday this morning. You know, I'm still sometimes probably too involved, but I'm curious and I want to understand what's going on in our business, you know, across all 37 markets and across the teams, and that's important to me. But we can't, I know people talk about what's your 5-year plan and your 3-year plan. So I think the last 6 months has shown us that it's pointless to plan that far out, you know, because it's wrong. You need a plan, absolutely. You also need a healthy dose of it's just the plan. It's not concrete and it's not, you know, it's not written in blood. It's like, it's going to change and it's going to be wrong and you're going to need to adapt. And, you know, to reference nature for a second, nature knows this. It's done it for 3.8 billion years. Change is inevitable and, you know, evolution is really important. And I think we've built that muscle into Seedlip over the last 5 years because there's been constant change, and that can be really uncomfortable for some people. And as evidenced in the drinks industry, change of what? There's non-alcoholic spirits now. What the hell is this, you know, kind of craziness? Change can be uncomfortable in the drinks industry too. So it's kind of, yeah, we've built that muscle of being adaptable and agile, and you know, we've just moved people out of our sales team who are focused on hotels, bars and restaurants and put them into our digital team.
Right.
Why wouldn't we? Right. Because there aren't any hotels, bars, restaurants that are kind of open. So yeah, it's being able to make those calls and taking risks, basically.
And this must come down to the culture that's you've created across time, whether that's been super deliberate, maybe there wasn't a plan, but it's as you said, evolved, but a culture where people happy to take risks, are comfortable around change. And what else would you say is, you know, key to the culture of Seedlip?
I get really annoyed with people when they don't take their holidays, for example. That really annoys me. You know, we sort of hopefully set up the kind of working culture at Seedlip to be, firstly, you know, and I'm not talking about COVID here, I'm just talking more generally, please, can you just come into the office sort of at least once a week, right? Number one, you don't need to come in 5 days. Come in 5 days if you want, but don't feel like you have to. That was kind of one key thing. We don't do any internal email at Seedlip. Haven't probably for the last 4.5 years. Email is for our customers, our consumers, our partners, our suppliers, not for our team. So we use Slack. We don't use WhatsApp. Right. There is no company WhatsApp. We've never had a company WhatsApp. That's people's personal lives that should be on there. And so, it's sort of, you know, I love boxes. And so it's kind of like, this is what email's for. This is what Slack's for. This is what WhatsApp's for. Take holidays. We pay people to go on holiday for a week as a whole business when we shut the company down every August for a week. So I ask people to go out and spend a week in nature, and we pay them to do that. So they get more holiday. and it's this funny balance of not asking people to work longer hours, you know, and be busier and, you know, slave away. It's like, no, just when you do work, just make sure that it's absolutely brilliant and first class.
Yeah, something tells me that trusted environment that you're talking about, you've created, I bet that creates incredible productivity.
I think so. I think I kind of, and it's been a challenge, you know, the last 6 months. It's obviously been different. We're very used to working remotely. We're very used to working digitally. But we've got a tight team in terms of the relationships that have been formed over the last few years. And people, I like to think, you know, they get on. And, you know, when I started to hear a few years ago that team members were going on holiday together, I was kind of like, that's, you know, we're not building, it's not a friendship club and we're not a family. But I was like, wow, that's really speaks a lot about our culture, because, you know, when it's, I don't know, midnight at the end of a trade show where you've been standing there for 4 days saying the same thing for 4 days on your feet, and you've got to pack up, and you've got to clear out, and you've got to, you know, that's where you need to really get on with the people that you're doing that with, right? Yeah. You build strong relationships with those people. I do, you know, we have to work harder in the last 6 months to foster a culture that can be agile and make decisions and have clarity and stick to deadlines and get really great work done when you can't go out for a drink afterwards, or you can't grab a coffee, or you can't metaphorically, you know, hold hands and have a hug. And kind of go, look, we're all in this. Wow, it's tough and it's changing and it's exciting and we're growing, but look what's going on and who knows what's going to happen. You know, I had big dreams of like, oh, we're going to have a company nutritionist and we're going to have this shutdown where people are going to go on holiday and we're going to pay them to go on holiday and be in nature and we're going to do litter picks as a team. And some of the, you know, we don't have a company nutritionist, but we have done company litter picks and we have, you know, had Nature Week where people have gone off and spent time in everywhere from like the Grand Canyon to, you know, the Shetlands to wild camping to the rainforest. So I think it's a great way of bringing, you know, our love of nature through our culture as well as how we bring our brand to life.
So really, yeah, as you say, I'm sure it's not just some values pasted to the wall. It can be the case in some organizations. These are manifest by the sounds of it. This is happening. This is real. There's investment behind it, which makes it, you know, very focused and important. And just kind of slightly shifting towards the future, and we know in this year, as you said, it's bloody hard to have any kind of sense of what the future holds. But I'd love to get a sense from you, because you know, you're clearly a company not just thinking differently, but acting differently and doing differently because of this love of nature that's at the core. So what does the future hold for Seedlit for you? I mean, in terms of what you can tell us now.
Yeah, this 5 years is pivotal for us, I think, just not because it's a birthday, but just where we're at as a brand and a business of having, you know, launched this category and expanded Seedlit to lots of countries around the world, and now there are loads of other products in this category, and there are shelves dedicated to it in supermarkets, and there are menus dedicated to it in bars and restaurants, and there are books, and there are podcasts, and there are events and festivals and conferences, and you know, there's an ecosystem that has now been formed surrounding you know, non-alcoholic options. That's brilliant, and we're really proud to have been part of that. I think for us now, moving forward, we want to be far more of a nature company in terms of, you know, less about the kind of, let me tell you about distillation and let me tell you about, you know, Seedlit and tonics, and less about the products and less about the kind of the educational aspect around, hey, you know, when you're driving and you're not drinking alcohol, maybe instead of a boring lime and soda, you could have this option. More and more about, you know, the wonders of the natural world, and more about what we're doing to celebrate and protect the planet, and more about using our small platform as a voice and vehicle for, you know, positive change, and to inspire an audience to love and look after nature. And yes, that's partly you know, our impact from an environment and a sustainability perspective, but yes, also that's about sharing just how absolutely incredible nature is and can be, and you know, when you think that we can grow our gift boxes, as we were talking about earlier, and nature knows best, and you know, nature's got a lot of the answers that we need, and we need to recalibrate our relationship with the natural world. So we've got a lot of work kind of coming out over the next few months in terms of our commitments, in terms of celebrating nature, and kind of the beginning of what we're calling a kind of 30-year journey, because you know, we're not perfect, we're not bad, and we're not trying to be perfect. We just want progress, and to make things better, and to be the best business, you know, that we can be for our consumers, and also for the natural world. So yeah, there's loads of stuff that's going to be coming out that's really exciting, and I think we just get to kind of be the brand that I always hoped we could be, and always dreamed that we could be, where we can have a kind of more pure, unadulterated you know, obsession with championing nature. It's really cool, in a really positive and future focused pioneering way that stops people in their tracks and goes, oh my god, you made a box out of mushrooms, that's mental. Why do we need polystyrene and plastic and so much cardboard?
Wow. Especially in this run-up to a Christmas that I can only describe as going to be an Amazon Christmas, unfortunately. The amount of packaging that is going to be in all our homes, and you know, that innovation of yours really gives me hope.
Yeah, I think, you know, and you know, IKEA are going to start using mycelium in their packaging, it's sort of right. Like, if you know, there are big shifts afoot, I think, in the world of, you know, sort of sustainability as an aspect, which is great and needed and necessary. I guess we also want to balance that with, yes, we need to do the right thing for the environment, but here's why we should care about the environment, because look how fucking incredible it is. I think that's, you know, I don't kind of recycle and compost and try and do the right thing at home because I love the kind of a closed loop system or a circular economy or cradle to grave analysis or kind of the kind of geeky technical side of the environment. I love it. I do it because I love, you know, the wildlife and the trees and, you know, the Great Barrier Reef and the Amazon rainforest and the kind of just absolute just incredibleness of nature that I want my kids to be able to see and experience.
Yeah, completely. But that awe of just being in nature and feeling small. And I think, we, you know, coming full circle, you know, this is what Sir David Attenborough has done for us. We haven't, you know, maybe we've been lucky enough to visit some of those places. Most of us haven't, but we know at least you can see it. And I love that sense of the connection between, you know, every act, every action that we're taking as individuals and as organizations. The bigger reason for that is nature, is to preserve and conserve the world that we and not live apart from it, we live in, which seems to have escaped an awful lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, we're 18%, you know, the human race, 18% of our body is carbon, for example, right? We actually are all part of nature, and we are nature, you know. And we've forgotten that, and the dynamic has changed, and we've abused our power and our intelligence, and we need to get back on an even keel. I think really and restore some equilibrium there, and remember that we need nature. You know, nature doesn't need us. It really doesn't, and we need it. And you know, seedling needs nature to make drinks. So if there isn't nature, then there isn't seedlit. So yeah, that's sort of, and there's amazing work going on, and there are, you know, there are incredible people out there doing incredible things, you know, from, you know, bacteria that can eat plastic to drones that can plant trees, you know, to biodegradable bullets, and all, you know, just there's some really incredible kind of thinking and work happening out there, and that's what we want to be part of.
Yeah, and all of that gives a sense of hope, I think. Yes. in a we can get, as we talked about, you know, equally excited and terrified about what's going on. we can naturally push to the terrified quite quickly, but that sense of hope is really important. And just Ben, I'm just conscious of your time now, and just thinking about when you want more of that hope, that good mojo feeling that you talked about, and finding that fluidity. Are there some things that you do just for yourself personally every day that you just find really helpful? Because I know listeners always love this from guests.
I try and do most of my work and thinking early in the morning. That's one thing I do, because that's when I feel like my brain is at its best. I don't make any big decisions in the evening or late afternoon. I do those in the morning, because I know when I make hopefully the best or better decisions. I will feed my chickens, feed the fish, feed the dogs, go outside, you know, and just be out in the garden for some part or point of the day. So fresh air, you know, as simple as that sounds. But I can't, yeah, fresh air's vital. They're probably some, you know, I have a green juice, or I get on the Peloton, or I kind of have to do these other things. It's just fresh air and organizing my day around when my brain performs best.
Yes.
So that I can see my kids, that I can get what I need to done. And, you know, I'm in bed at 7:30, 8 o'clock every night. So yeah, our day is all earlier.
Sounds like you're following the sun.
Yeah.
Following nature.
Yeah. It feels like that, more in that rhythm.
Beautiful. Well, Ben Branson, thank you so much for your time today. We could go on and on, but I'm respectful of your time and the audience's time as well. And I really, really appreciate you joining the Mojo podcast today.
Thanks, Richard. It's been great.
I just wanted to thank Ben again for his time and honesty in our chat. He's a pretty in-demand guy, and he was super generous with his time. And indeed, I was struck how smartly he manages his time to keep his mojo as flowing as possible. He knows when his best times are, best times to make decisions and to be in flow. And it's one thing knowing this, but it's another thing sticking to it when the pressure's on. I'm going to take some learnings from that. Of course, Ben knows a thing or two about brands. He's been behind so many brands before even created Seedlip, but what he really understands is a brand is a promise. A promise that is not always kept by some brands, but you just know he's built a company that is very clear about its brand promise and its steadfast mission to stick to that promise. Ben wrote a brilliant LinkedIn post on their fifth birthday, which tells you exactly what the Seedlip promise is and will be, and I'll link to that in the show notes. And back to that other really powerful word, almost loaded word, that Ben brings out a few times, deluded. And being deluded, usually this is a negative, right? In that it means believing something that is not true. And what is it that we do believe is true that actually might be holding us back? We do tend to create stories in our minds that can get in the way, stop us doing and making change, because we believe it can't be true. So maybe being a bit deluded is a really healthy thing. Many more amazing guests to come over the next few weeks. Do subscribe to make sure you get episodes as soon as they arrive, usually on a Monday every 2 weeks. And please do your bit to help more people discover the Mojo podcast by leaving a 5-star rating. And please do write that short review on Apple Podcasts. Until next time, I hope your mojo continues to flow.